Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. How can we show support for our troops? And what does that even mean after 8.5, 9 years at war, whether it's in Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever our troops go around the world? Today, we've invited 4 guests to talk about how we can support our troops. And no, I will not put them all on the air at the same time because I'm not that good. Richard Isbell is the City of Columbus's ADA and Veterans Affairs Coordinator. Rick, welcome back to the show.
I'm really glad to be here. Thank
you,
man.
Appreciate that. And also with us, Pete Margaritas. He is the coordinator for the American Legion Blood Drive. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Thank you very much.
And joining us later, but I don't want to leave him just sit here without introducing him, Roger Bach. He is the president of the Marine Corps Family Support Community. Roger, we'll be with you later, but appreciate you being here now.
Thank you.
And coming up next, Al Brzezinski. He is a spokesperson for the Chalmers P. Wiley Veterans Ambulatory Care Center. There's got to be a better name for that, but Al will be joining us in the next segment. So for now, Rich and Pete, you're with us now. And Rick, I was kind of wondering just in general, over time, how has public support changed?
Well, we still see a very strong undercurrent of civilians and people wanting to give to military and veterans. It's a wonderful outpouring. I get a phone call at least once a week, once a day, someone saying, hey, can you help me out? I want to help. I want to send something to a person who's in Iraq or Afghanistan. And one of the great things that we do here in Ohio that is different than some other states is we have the Ohio ISVAC, which is bringing together all of those groups and veterans groups and military groups who want to give under one roof, which is put on by our Ohio Adjutant General, General Waite. And he's a very futuristic gentleman, looking into the future, knowing how to take care of his troops, but they're purple. And by saying purple, ladies and gentlemen, it is reaching out to all military branches. It's not just the Army. It's not just the Guard and Reserves. Anybody that's having problems, any family that's having problems can reach out to this group and find out what they can do to help. So when a group goes off to Iraq, their families are left here. And this family assistance group is there, and it's broken up into 6 areas in the state of Ohio. We've got an 800 number. Let me go ahead and give you that right
now.
Sure,
we'll post it on the website too.
It's 1-877-695-2170. And of course, I call it the ISVAC. It's the Ohio Inter-Service Family Assistance Committee.
And another name.
I know. It's a military thing. The wonderful thing about this is that we get groups all the time that really want to help. And say you've got a group of ladies over here in West Jefferson, they want to collect socks, and they want to send it to the troops really bad, or they want to get cookies, or they want to get these things. Well, the group they want to send it to could be at Camp Anaconda, and let's face it, they've got fast food restaurants and a BX bigger than a Kmart and all these things that they already have the socks. So let's focus on the things that the military needs. And so when you call the ISVAC, say, well, actually, we do have a group that's in an outpost somewhere in, you know, Hugachistan who really needs some help. And then we can actually send them what they need, or a family back home that needs something.
I guess there's vastly different needs then, and people need to first know who do you want to help at this point? They're not all – it's not the same situation everywhere.
So true. So true.
And so do people usually know that when people think they want to help the troops, are they usually thinking in terms of people being, you know, out in the middle of a desert somewhere or what?
I think people have different mindsets, but on the surface, they're thinking, I want to help the troops. I want to help someone's in uniform. I want to help someone's boots are on the ground. And then they start hearing about the disabled vet.
Right.
Well, someone's come back without a leg, without an arm. Traumatic brain injury.
So much of that.
Yeah, and there's a lot of need. What about the gentleman who can't get to and from his appointment? Yes, we have veterans groups, but with so many out there, there's more of a need for help back home.
Now, some people, very well-meaning, think, well, why isn't the military taking care of these guys, these men and women?
Wow, that's a sticky situation.
Yeah.
The military wants to help, and you can see a big paradigm shift with the military and how they are actually reaching out and doing more for those who have left or those who are injured and disabled. For the longest time, if you remember right, that was the warrior ethic. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm a vet. I can take care of myself. And a lot of gentlemen and ladies didn't step up and go to the VA, or they didn't go and ask for help. Well, that paradigm shift of the military actually saying, hey, if you're having a problem, let us know. It's not going to hurt your career if you're trying to move forward. And yes, a lot of people may think it's lip service. I don't think so, because with all the problems they're having, they need to step up. They need to start saying, hey, if you do have traumatic brain injury or you're having problems at home, you need to tell us now before you get in trouble later.
Now, NPR, National Public Radio, just finished a series on traumatic brain injury and how a lot of folks aren't getting the help they need. You can't see it. It's being blamed on different things. And this is not to be confused with the whole personality disorder problem mm-hmm. that's out there. So when you hear that, is it discouraging to people to hear stuff like that? Or do you think it educates them and helps?
Well, it educates, it helps, and quite frankly, it lights a fire under the people on the other side of the fence that say, hey, yeah, we're doing great, we're doing helpful. But when they hear these reports and hear back from the soldiers saying, hey, I'm not getting any help, nobody's helping me. You know, I personally didn't feel like I got any help when I got out. I'm a disabled vet.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of doors slammed in my face, and a lot of people tell me to go to places that weren't even there anymore. So when I do my job, I try to remember that, and I am hoping that other vets remember that and keep it close to their heart that, hey, it was tough for us. Let's try to make it a little easier for the next generation.
You're listening to Rick Isbell. He is with the Columbus Veterans. He's the coordinator for Columbus Veterans Affairs and also with the Americans with Disabilities Act in Columbus. If you have a question or comment for Rick about how you can help our troops, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And you can go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page as well and post a question or comment that way. Also with us in the studio is Pete Margaritis. He is coordinator for the American Legion Blood Drive. Want to talk about that, because that's a really obvious way that a lot of people think about helping the troops is giving the kind of the ultimate is giving them a pint of blood. Question or comment on that? Now, both Pete and Rick are going to be here for the whole hour, so if you don't get your question in right away, that's okay. Although it's a very busy hour. Pete?
Before you say anything, I want to add one thing to what Rick said.
Sure.
I personally know several individuals, in fact, one very close to me, that has echoed what he's said, and that's the fact that this individual for years had a physical injury that was connected with the service. And he did not want to file a claim. He did not want to go to the VA. He did not want to seek medical service from the military because he thought there were others that needed it more than he did and that he could somehow cope with what he had. And there's a lot of that going on because that's the mentality that you get in the service. I can handle it. I can do it. And sometimes it becomes overwhelming and you really can't.
Is this coming to such a head, though, now with this? Because so many more troops are surviving injuries that they would have died of before, so we're having to cope with a whole new generation of injuries that maybe they wouldn't have survived before?
Oh, that's true. A lot of individuals now, we're saving a lot more that are injured in the field than we were, say, in World War II or Korea because of the fact that technology has advanced as far as it has.
True, and the economy. You look at a generation ago, our Vietnam veterans came back, and those that could work, they went to work in factories. Therefore, you could concentrate on your area, work your 10 to 12 hours, and not worry about, even though you're surrounded by people, you didn't have to talk to them. You just did your job. You got it done, and then you did whatever you wanted to after you were done with your work. Those jobs are going away. People can't work. And when you don't work, you have stress, and your problems come to a head.
And not just not having a job at all is stressful for anybody. The Dispatch had a story in the paper today about the increase in homeless since the last census, and it's big. It's something like 12.7% increase. But what they didn't break out was the number of veterans in that number, and they always make up a pretty significant amount of homeless in this country.
That's true.
Especially considering what they've done for us. Pete, let's talk about blood, because that's That's an interesting story, how the Armed Services Blood Program works. Can you tell us how that works now?
I sure can. The ASBP, the Armed Services Blood Program, is the military counterpart to the civilian blood collection agencies. It's the distribution network for the armed forces. It is the vehicle by which blood products are collected, processed, and distributed to the troops, both in the field and here at home. It was created in late 1951 by a presidential directive, Harry Truman, at the height of the Korean War, because we needed some sort of a network, a secure network, to get blood out to the troops. I mean, men and women were dying in Korea because we couldn't get blood out there to them fast enough. So they wanted to create some sort of a network, and it's been around ever since.
It's changed in recent years. It used to be completely internalized.
Yes, ma'am.
Now it's accepting blood from civilians.
That's correct. That happened in September 2007. The Department of Defense changed its policy to allow civilians, members of the public, to donate to the Armed Services Blood Program as well, but it's still under restricted circumstances.
Right. You still have to be on federal property.
That's correct.
That kind of a thing.
And it has to be collected by a group from the Armed Services Blood Program. There's 21 such blood centers in the world, and of the 21, four of them are overseas or not in the continental United States. So there's only 17 in this country, and of the 17, they're all on major military bases. So if you're not on a military base or don't have access to a military base, it's kind of hard for a civilian to be able to come onto the base and actually donate blood to the military.
And when they donate blood to the Red Cross, their blood, can they ask for it to be directed?
Yes, ma'am. They can ask till the cows come home, but the Red Cross will ultimately distribute the blood as it sees best.
And the military does go to the Red Cross at times.
Yes, ma'am.
For blood.
And during intensified operations or during a time of war, they run short. So they go to the Red Cross, and if the Red Cross has the available blood, they will sell it to the military at a price that's sometimes it's always hundreds of dollars per pint, and the price is always classified. So no one knows how much the military is actually paying. And it fluctuates with the market demand, and it also fluctuates by blood type. Some bloods are rarer than others, right. So they cost more.
Rick, did you want to say something?
Yeah, it was at a premium is what I was going to add to that anybody that gets blood from the Red Cross, they actually have to buy it. The military actually has to buy it.
And that's the way it's always been.
That's the way it's always been. We have to take a break, as usual. When we return, we'll be with Al Brzezinski. He is with the Chalmers P. Wiley Veterans Ambulatory Care Center, and we'll talk to him about that name as well as many other things that they do there. When we return, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post a comment or question there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. And at noon, fresh air will be here. Think of a tiny little ant and think it can't hurt you. They sting, they bite, and some species can even overwhelm and kill prey 10,000 times their size. On the next Fresh Air, an ant expert. And he spent his entire career researching those tiny insects. That discussion on Fresh Air at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Get access to WOSU at WOSU.org. Hear the latest updates from NPR and WOSU News from the convenience of your computer by streaming on the web. Listen online at WOSU.org. 75 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20 this morning. Sunshine today, a high of 82. Clear skies tonight, a low of 58 degrees. Sunny for Friday and a high of 88. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820. NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. We're talking about how we can support our troops. There's more ways than one. Maybe find out which is the best for you. We're going to post that 800 number that Rick Isbell mentioned earlier. kind of a clearinghouse for ways to support troops, ways to volunteer. If you have an idea, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joining us now, Al Brzezinski. Al, you're with the Chalmers P. Wiley Veterans Ambulatory Care Center. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What do you do over there?
I am the public affairs officer here at the VA Medical Facility here in Columbus, Ohio. But I work closely with the gentlemen that are in studio today. Welcome, gentlemen. Or hello.
Hey, Al.
Hi.
And I work closely with the veteran service organizations, some other organization, volunteer organizations, such as the Thank You Foundation, and members of the community to ensure that we uphold our mission here at the VA to care for those who borne the battle, their widow, and their orphan.
How has the mission changed over the last 8.5, 9 years? It's been a long haul now.
Absolutely. The mission has changed as it relates to the ability to reconnect, as some of the guests said earlier during the show, that we are working closely with our armed forces counterparts, National Guard and Reserve components, the veteran service organizations, and the VA have all come together to ensure that as best as possible to have some type of seamless transition when our warriors and their families return home from theater or serving their country, whether it be peacetime, humanitarian missions, peacekeeping missions. Now, that's one thing that we have to consider, that not all service to country is going to be in a theater of combat.
Mm-hmm. How has it changed, though? This has been such a long war. Now, I say war, I'm just going to use the singular for simplicity's sake, but it's been a long time now.
I would say that the conflicts that we're engaged in right now successfully, we are ensuring that our service members and their families are well in tune to what's available to them. Many years ago, as some of the gentlemen in the studio can attest to, in our case, or in my case, it was thank you very much for serving and try to figure out this whole system known as the VA or the Franklin County Veteran Service Commission Office or the other veteran service organizations, trying to figure out what's available to them. I can say that as a representative of the Department of Veterans Affairs, belonging to a lot of the veteran service organizations, and being an Army public affairs officer, that we have all come together to ensure that our veterans, our future veterans, our warriors who are returning home, and their families are well taken care of. That, many years ago, may not have been so organized, for a lack of better phrase, but I could say as a lesson learned, that we all have collectively learned from our previous experiences to ensure that everyone, first and foremost, is welcome home properly and they receive the entitlements that they earned.
Right.
I do have to admit, Secretary Shinseki has really stepped up for the veterans and has possibly been one of the best secretaries we've ever had.
That's why he was put in that job, specifically, to overhaul the system. Right, Al?
I would say, not speaking on behalf of the secretary, but being a former chief of staff for the armed forces and being a warrior himself and commanding men on the ground and being a Vietnam veteran, he walked in the boots. So he understands the challenges that our veterans and the warriors returning home and their family members have faced. And the wisdom that he's collected over the years, he is making a positive difference in the lives of everyone that we all collectively serve.
The armed services have taken a lot of hits. There's another one on NPR today. They're criticizing the handling of traumatic brain injuries. There have been lots of criticisms about the issue of personality disorder and the diagnosis of that. There's been problems revealed about Walter Reed, the famous hospital. We all have heard of that a million times, but it came to light, some pretty horrible things. How does that affect how you do your job and how you meet the public every day?
Well, the biggest thing that I always remind my staff, my team, and the members that I work with, we're team members out in the community, is we're interested in fixing the problem, not the blame. That's the whole crux of the situation. I can say that the system isn't perfect sometimes, and I can't speak on the behalf of the Department of the Army.
Mm-hmm.
But I can also say that working with the members of the mental health on both sides of the house, Department of the Army and the VA, and Department of Defense, from that perspective too, working with those folks, that there are a lot of things that are being done proactively to ensure that the service members who are returning home that may be dealing with combat stress, chronic PTSD, or traumatic brain injury, that there are tests in place, that we address the mentality or address the culture, as was mentioned earlier, about the warrior mentality.
Yeah.
So I can tell you that, you know, the commanders that I have worked with personally on the ground, to include the Ohio National Guard and General Waite's staff and their mental health initiatives through Ohio Cares, that they are engaged with the service members. Battery tests are performed. There's a support network for them and their families when they come back home, because it's a challenge that we are all dealing with. It's a significant injury as it relates to this current conflict. However, I can say with the utmost commitment that all of us, from the Department of Defense, the Veteran Service Organizations, to the City of Columbus, to the VA, we are all committed to ensure that our veterans are taken care of.
You know, on one hand, it's been a lot of criticism, but on the other hand, it is educating the public. I mean, do you find that people are coming to you better educated, better prepared, more aware of what they need and what they can get from the VA and from the services in general?
From my personal perspective, yes. If you was to ask me that question 13 years ago when I separated from service and moved to Columbus, Ohio, I would emphatically say no. But I can tell you right now some of the things that were discussed earlier here during this interview. Yes, folks are more well-informed about what's available. And if we, as I mentioned earlier, the folks in the studio, we all work together. And we're very fortunate to be in the city of Columbus, Franklin County, to have so many committed, passionate community members, leaders, volunteers who are willing to step up and make a difference in the lives for those who answered America's call to duty.
Rick Isbell, how much does a lot of this have to do with the fact that a lot of these men and women, they're still very young when they go?
True. You come home and you're bulletproof. You think, I don't need any help. I just want to go back to my life, especially those who are in the Guards and National Guard. They're thinking, I'm going to go back to my life. I want to go back to normalcy. I don't even want to think about the military. 60 days later, some problems start stemming up, and that's when the family turbulence starts happening. And a lot of times it's the families that step up and say, hey, I think you need to help me with my service member. And I love it, the fact that there are routes for families to take, and it is more proactive, and things are being done. And jumping on what Al said, I'm noticing that the National Guards and airmen, they're actually getting a lot better treatment nowadays than, say, the reservists who come out, because they're kind of left without a net.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the reservists are.
They could call ISFAC if they want to, but they don't come home to a command. They're just kind of strewn out all over the land, and they pick them onesies and twosies from out the United States and throw them together into a group. And then when they come home, there's nobody there for them to talk to, or they maybe get a webinar. Who wants a webinar? You know, you need a little face to face.
Yes.
But I'm seeing good things and I'm seeing bad things. So it would be really nice. With your National Guardsmen, they have to be in front of a commander or a supervisor 30, 60, 90 days before they can even get out of the service. So you can try and catch these problems and get them in front of somebody to talk about whatever's going on in their lives. Not with a reservist. You're out of the service, and either you take care of yourself or your family takes care of you.
Are families becoming more educated? We're going to talk about that later. But are they getting – you said that they'll be often the ones that seek the help in the first place. Was that you, Rick, or was that you, Al?
That was Rick, but okay. I can dovetail off of what Rick is saying, is that we have seen during this current conflict that the family members are more involved with health care, and they're more involved going to Bethesda or Walter Reed as it relates to ensuring that their family members, the loved ones, get the care that they deserve, even when they come to the VA medical facility. And I can also say that we work closely with the family readiness groups on both the National Guard side and the active duty side. We have family readiness groups, you know, at various locations throughout the state of Ohio. And once again, the family members are the ones responsible for holding things down when the warrior is off performing his or her duties as it relates to being in the military. And they're the conduits. They're the ones who, you know, are the, for lack of a better phrase, the person who brings these issues to our attention. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes we really do care, and, well, we do care, but we appreciate them coming to us. Because if we don't know what the situation is, we can't rectify it. And we do depend on the families, and we really do appreciate their service. Everyone that served in the military, they will tell you, if it wasn't for the family members and the community, it wouldn't make some of the things that service members endure worthwhile or palatable as it relates to some of the grind that's associated with serving one's country.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. Got a question or comment for our guest today? We're talking about how you can help support the troops. It comes in many, many different forms. We'll have the website. Rick, what's the name of that again?
Which
the
website? The ISFAC? Yeah, the Ohio Inter-Service Family Assistance Committee.
Ohio Inter-Service Family Assistance Committee, and we already have that website up on our a link to that up on our website now at WOSU.org/allsides. Judy, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, one thing that's always concerned me is the gap of awareness with people with traumatic brain injury. And my husband was in a 6-week coma, and for decades I've lived with that, and I understand that it's very elusive and how people can fall through the cracks because it's so complicated for people to reach out for help and how much people need advocates for reaching out for help. And it sounds like they're aware of that and trying to do that, but I wonder how often people fall through those cracks because of the brain injury and lack of awareness about having a brain injury.
Well, it happens a lot, ma'am. It really does. For one fact, you get a person with a brain injury, they may forget to go to an appointment, or they may forget what time or what drugs they're supposed to be taking. Therefore, you only get a couple of strikes and you're out once in the VA system. And Al, I'm not trying to harsh on you and your system, but if you do not make it to your appointments, it could be detrimental to your service.
How is that rectified, Al? In other words, when folks are released after they've had a possible injury, are they given any kind of tutorial? Are there follow-ups on their behalf, or do they have to do it themselves?
Well, my knowledge in working with traumatic brain injury from the public affairs side of the house, I can tell you that service members that I know personally and that have returned home, whatever branch of service, that they are monitored. I'll give you a case in point. A service member may experience a traumatic brain injury, and they may have to go to one of the military medical treatment centers. And for the Army, they do have a person on point that will ensure that the person that has the traumatic brain injury goes from the military treatment facility to the VA, and they are monitored. I can also tell you that the VA is working on a program, and it kind of dovetails off what Rick was saying about memory loss, that they're trying to leverage telecommunications and advancements in technology to assist those members who may have memory loss by coming up with ways such as recording devices to record things, to play it back, to remind them where they're at, so on and so forth. I can also say, too, that we do have outreach teams that we work closely with the community and the military to ensure that the members, whether it's PTSD, TBI, amputations, whatever the case might be, or just an ordinary veteran coming back, we're out there engaged. So I hate to hear stories like that, but once again, we are trying to educate and be proactive as possible to reach as many people as we can. Hence the reason it's important that we work with the community, the veteran service organizations, volunteers, and families to get the word out so these situations don't happen.
Judy, tell us about your spouse. Where did he serve?
Well, actually, my husband isn't in the military.
Okay.
But he was in a six-week coma, and he went on to become a pastor and get a master's degree and did very well in the ministry, except for different times. And it's such an elusive problem
that
there can be big gaps in behavior and judgment. And I would always, I keep thinking about these military people coming back without, you need so many advocates. You need so many people to help you understand that you have a problem in judgment, because you can appear to be perfectly fine, but then you, there's these gaps.
Mm-hmm.
I call them black holes in consciousness, where, you know, it's enough to really affect your job and your family. And, you know, you just have to have people there who can be aware of what the problem is.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Judy. We appreciate
it. Sure.
I guess we'll take a break right now. You can give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you have any questions or comments, we have a few calls waiting. We'll get to as many of those as we can. In the meantime, when we return, Al, thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Joining us coming up next is Roger Bach. He is president of the Marine Corps Family Support Committee?
Community.
It's my dumb board not working for me right now. Roger Bach will be with us when we return, along with Rick Isbell and Pete Margaritas with the American Legion Blood Drive. 614-292-8513 if you have a question or comment. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Think a tiny ant can't hurt you? Some species can sting, bite, and even overwhelm and kill prey 10,000 times their size. Take the African driver ant.
They have jaws like knives, and so they can cut human flesh.
On the Next Fresh Air, ant expert Mark Moffitt. Join us for the Next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Developed by WOSU Public Media, the Columbus Metropolitan Library, ColumbusNeighborhoods.org features more than 30 neighborhoods in and around Columbus. It allows users to tell their own stories, post their own photos and video, and contribute to the collective story of Columbus. To be a part of this multimedia public engagement project or to learn more, visit ColumbusNeighborhoods.org. And you can get the latest information from WOSU the way you want it, daily, biweekly, or monthly. Go to WOSU.org/email and sign up for one of WOSU's e-newsletters. 75 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:40 this morning. Sunshine today, a high of 82 degrees. Clear skies tonight, a low of 58. Sunshine for Friday and a high of 88 degrees. Looking ahead to the weekend for Saturday, cloudy skies and a high of 91. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us now, Roger Bach. He is president of the Marine Corps Family Support Community. Roger, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Ann.
Roger, what do you do?
What do I do? Mm-hmm. We are a local nonprofit that started about 5 years ago with some parents who met at Parris Island, which is the boot camp for the East Coast for the Marines. And they recognized they didn't know anything. And as a parent, you're not able really to get any communications from the government. These are adults that have made a decision to join and serve their country. So they have to kind of feed off of each other. And it's particularly a problem or an issue in parts of the country where there are no Marine bases. And obviously we do not have any here in Ohio. It's further compounded by the Marine Corps being the smallest of the services. There's about 1.4 million active military right now, and only 200,000 of that are the Marines. So finding people in the community who also have family members in the Marine Corps is a lot harder to do than if you're an Army soldier. There's, you know, more available there.
Mm-hmm.
So it grew from that to just sharing information, finding out what one person may know that may help another person, to an organization that provides emotional and educational support to the families that are here at home, particularly when their Marine is deployed. All of the anxieties and how do I prepare for that and what will it be like when he comes home? Many of our families have been through that multiple times, so they know what the answer is. We then went on to providing care packages to the deployed. We do about 1,000 a year and have been doing that for about 4 or 5 years. And then as we were able to raise a little bit more money, we established what we call Mission Enduring Gratitude, and that is our support effort for the wounded. Some of it local, but primarily through the Naval Hospital in San Diego. We chose to go to the West Coast for two reasons. One, the East Coast gets most of the attention. And secondly, one of our members' son was severely wounded and was treated there. And based on that experience, felt that that was an excellent location for us to do support. And that is one of the hospitals that deals with traumatic brain injury and amputation.
Now, we've got a couple callers waiting that are upset about how the VA has handled their cases of their loved ones. What, or just in general, how it handles the returning veterans and taking care of their problems. How much of that do you juggle, that frustration and anger and, in what you do?
Yeah, we do get the parents who come and say, hey, he's in the bedroom. He won't come out. He's drinking. He's into illicit drugs. What can I do? The VA, in addition to the Chalmers Wiley, also has another program called the Vet Centers. Vet Centers are somewhat independent from the VA. They are part of the Department of the Veterans Affairs. But their total focus is on dealing with those that are having adjustment problems, PTSD, whatever their issues are. And they're set up in a storefront. The one here in Columbus happens to be next to the North Market. It's a very laid-back facility, very small facility. It's not like walking into a huge hospital facility or office building that you have with the VA. And these are trained psychologists and psychiatrists. A number of them are military veterans, including one who was Lima Company. So they understand what the veteran is going through, not only from the educational standpoint that they receive as psychologists or psychiatrists, but from a standpoint of a number of them having been there, done that. The challenge is, as we've talked about before, to get the veteran or the active duty to recognize they've got a problem. You can lead the horse to water, but if they won't drink, and that is one of the big challenges that some of the families have. Some react by picking them up, putting in the car, saying we're going out for ice cream, and the next thing they know, they show up at the vet center.
How much effort is put into preparing folks who are leaving the service or leaving active duty for life after that, Rick? You think about the things that we're prepared to do in our lives, and when I hear about it, I just hear that they're just sort of cut loose as a rule, unless there's something overtly wrong.
Well, that all depends on which level of military you're in. Most of them have a transition assistance program where they're getting out, and they're debriefed, and some are actually held over, like in Kentucky or different parts of the country, until they get these briefings. And they will talk about traumatic brain injury. They'll talk about disabilities. They'll talk, and they're supposed to actually be taken through by the VA and looked over to see if they have a disability. Every single one of them. That's what's supposed to happen. These guys can attest to it.
So much of our conversation, obviously, 8 or 9 years ago, it would have been about supporting the troops over there, and that's still a big priority for a lot of folks. But now it's about supporting the troops that return and how to take care of them. Are there, and this is a family organization, are there, when you think about supporting the troops and when people go to this the website that we're posting on our website, are they going to find ways to help people who are back and return now? And what sort of things can people do for them? besides change public policy and improve the facilities.
And they can go and help the families that are in need, support, join a veterans group. Veterans groups aren't just there to do bingo and drink at the bar. They actually do things in the community. American Legion does a million things.
As a matter of fact, right now as we speak, Buckeye Boys State is going on up at Bowling Green, as well as Buckeye Girls State. Right. And those are annual affairs that are both sponsored by the American Legion.
Right. All your TVs in the VA, that's given to them by veterans groups, mostly American Legion. And I'm not just saying that because Pete's sitting next to me. They do a great job. Your AMVETs, they're helping vets by helping them with education. They have education centers throughout the United States. There's a lot of good things going on with your veterans group, so you can join, even as a civilian. And there's ways that you can be part of, not alternates, but...
Affiliates.
Thank you, affiliates. So there's ways of giving back, and there's a lot of people and groups. For instance, if you want to help people coming up here in the fall, we have a homeless veteran stand down. Give me a call, and I'll hook you up. You can come in and volunteer at the homeless veteran stand down. Give people a hand up instead of a handout.
Okay. 614-292-8513. Chris, you're on the air. You want to talk about your struggles with the VA? Is this a personal story, or is it someone you know?
Well, it's my uncle's. It's from not recent, but it's from, you know, past wars, World War II, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I must say I'm really grateful for the efforts of your guests. It's clear that they're super committed and they understand deeply the nature of the issues. But as a civilian, it's very frustrating for me when we see, you know, support for the F-22 Raptor, billions and billions of dollars for a program which the Air Force said they didn't want, but because our congressmen, you know, want to have money in their home state, we're spending money on weapon systems like that when the money should be going for increasing the care of our veterans. And while it's clear that everyone involved in the system is committed, it's sad to hear, you know, the suicide rates of returning veterans, divorce rates, all those things. And recently it was reported, I don't know of the accuracy, but my understanding is that suicide deaths among returning veterans is getting close to the amount of deaths that actually occurred overseas. And, you know,
the National Public Radio just had a report out today. I haven't heard it, but I read it. There were 197 Army suicides in 2008, according to the Army's numbers. That total includes active and non-active duty soldiers. And last year, the number was 245. This year, just through May, it's already 163.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think I am going to check out your website to see how I might be able to personally help and, you know, not just complain. But so I'll do that part. But just, you know, overall, our entire government has failed them, and it's actually shameful. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for your call. Yes. Pete.
I understand what he's saying. As a matter of fact, I attended the Army and National Guard Family Readiness Center it was last month, and they had a seminar on suicides, and it's alarming the number of servicemen and servicewomen that are actually committing suicide, and it's a problem. And quite often, the signs aren't there until it's too late, and we need to do more to be able to understand what's going on before it happens.
You know, the story in NPR today is that the signs actually are there, but the system that's in place to take care of these folks doesn't respond to those signs very well.
My understanding is, that's pretty true.
It's not that anybody's purposefully trying to ignore them. It's just not set up.
I think there's an overwhelming number of military that we're facing right now that are facing challenges, not only from their military service, put them out in the community, and the unemployment rate. I mean, how frustrated individuals must become, having served their country, struggling for help from the VA or from other sources, and at the same time not having a job. So I think that, in my opinion, would exacerbate the number of suicides that are occurring.
And you have to think that the psychological or the doctors are overwhelmed as well. I'm not trying to, you know, play both sides here, but you get an overwhelming amount of people, so they start triaging. Okay, what's the level of problem here? How can we help? Who's the person that is most likely to commit suicide? So they start treating on that level. Some of the things that I think our schools, our education system can do is start stepping up, getting the people that actually served, the ones with boots on the ground, through a program to be the psychologists, the psychiatric people, the doctors, and have some special programs using the GI Bill, using their abilities, and getting them through as fast as possible, you know, making sure that they are competent, but get them through as fast as possible so they can start treating these people because they're coming back at an enormous rate.
614-292-8513, or you can send us an email at allsides@wosu.org, or you can go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, post a comment or question there. There was, in the wake of the Walter Reed Army Medical Center scandal in 2007, they created these warrior transition units. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with those?
Only by what they said. I've never met anybody in the warrior transition unit.
Been through one?
I haven't.
No, there's a number of programs. There's Wounded Warrior Project, the Marine Corps, and I think the other services have established Wounded Warrior Barracks, those that are not being discharged because of medical or mental conditions, but still are on active duty. They've put them together in barracks. So that they have like circumstances and can support each other. And those have appear to be extremely successful.
Do you think our country is very good at dealing with this whole idea of the warriors returning and can't they just take care of themselves? I mean, do you think we're very good at coping with that emotional?
I don't think we're very good with coping with people with disabilities
period.
As a whole. Yeah. We have the ADA. It's 20 years this year. And it still doesn't have the teeth it should. And people don't, excuse this term, walk in the walk of someone who has a disability. They don't really see at that level. And until they can, it affects their life or they're around it enough to say, hey, we need some changes, it's not going to happen.
Well, I think part of it is just the whole national mentality as well. There's some of the veterans come back and they grumble that the military's at war and America's at the mall because the war that we have is really – it's not a declared war and yet we're at war. And sometimes we go about our business not realizing that there's a whole bunch that's going on over there. And so when a lot of these things come back and a lot of these issues arise, people are surprised because – they don't realize from a mental standpoint that we are in a struggle right now.
614-292-8513. Bill, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. There is a military's practice of getting out of paying benefits to veterans by giving them a dishonorable discharge just before their tour of duty is up for something like being overweight. A Marine who has served two tours of duty has no benefits and a black mark on their record, just so the military can save money.
Is that your sense?
No. No, it is not Roger my
Beck?
Sense. No. Not for being overweight. A dishonorable discharge would have to be a pretty severe situation. There are other discharges available that are less than honorable but are still not reaching to the level of a dishonorable discharge, which he is correct. With a dishonorable discharge, that does preclude them from a lot of the benefits that are there. Could be for the convenience of the service. There's all sorts of discharges they can do. But getting a bad conduct discharge for being overweight does not ring.
If that is not practiced, then how can you find out if they made a mistake?
That would have to be the service member would have to protest that or challenge that.
Mm-hmm.
can't, no one else can get involved. I suppose they could get an attorney involved if they wanted to go to that length of it. But as, a relative or a friend or anything, it's like anything else. There's privacy records and you can't get into those.
Okay.
You can actually look that up online for each service on who to go to about changing your DD-214, that's your discharge papers.
Okay.
If you would like to give me a call at my office, I can try to help you direct you to the right place.
Okay. Can you give me your number?
Yes, sir. It's 645.
Okay.
6504. And that's in Columbus. That's a 614 area code.
645-6504.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Before we sign off, I want to make sure that Pete Margaritis of the American Legion Blood Drive has a chance to give us a pitch for his current blood drive, or what's
yes,
the next
ma'am,
blood drive?
Yes, ma'am, I definitely want to do that. We've had these blood drives every 2 months for the last 3 years, ever since the Department of Defense changed its policy. And this is one of the few places in the United States where the public can actually come in and donate to the military. We have them every 2 months. The next one's going to be July 24th on a Saturday. It's going to be from 9 a.m. to 2 a.m., July 24th.
9 a.m. to 2 a.m.?
Right. And the reason for that is because
2 p.m.
Okay. Excuse me.
That's okay.
9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Sorry about that.
Okay. I have some tired service members there.
The reason for that is because the crew comes out from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. They drive to Columbus. They set up at the Reserve Center in Whitehall. The people donate the blood, and then they pack up their stuff. They go right back, and because the blood's perishable, they have to take it right back, and they process it immediately. The really neat thing about this, outside of the fact that this is one of the few drives open to the public, is the fact that this crew, they take the blood, they process it immediately, they drive it across the tarmac, and then they stick it on a plane, and it goes right overseas to Afghanistan and Iraq. This is probably one of the most direct ways you can support the troops in the field, because that blood goes right out.
And so, tell us that again. When is it?
It is July 24th. Anytime anybody wants to know anything about these blood drives, the website is www.blooddriveforthetroops.org. Blooddriveforthetroops.org. And if they have a problem with that or there's something that they don't know or need to find out, they can also call me too. My phone number is 614-395-0387, and I will make sure that I find out whatever information you need to know. But we have these every 2 months, and unlike other civilian agencies, when you come and you get blood, we don't just give you milk and cookies. We have hot dogs, and we have sloppy joes.
Right.
And if you walk away hungry, it's your own daggone fault, because we have breakfast stuff, and we have all kinds of food.
Okay, so give blood, give often. That's Pete Margaritis. He's the chairman of the American Legion 12th District. No, you're the blood drive coordinator for the American Legion.
I'm also with the 12th District.
12th District Council and the Department of
right.
Ohio.
Okay. July 24th.
July 24th. Go to our website at wosu.org/allsides for more information on that, or a link at least. Thank you, Pete, for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Roger Bach, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Ann.
Appreciate it. We'll have a website posted for the Marine Corps Family Support Community as well. Also, Rick Isbell, coordinator for Veterans Affairs for the City of Columbus. Thanks again for being with us.
And Ann, thank you for supporting the military community.
My pleasure. That's all we have time for. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.